Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and a lot more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics are playing in our daily lives. Things like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides. And we always wonder what Mother Earth wants while we're at it. My guest today is Patrick McRoy. He's the deputy director at Defend Our Health, a national nonprofit based in Maine that builds a grassroots movement to drive toxics out of our food, water, homes, and packaging. This past legislative session in Maine, Defend Our Health helped to pass first in the nation legislation banning sludge spreading. Working with our tribal neighbors on clean water access and working to make sure everyone has access to safe drinking water. That was accomplished by a team of people, but the policy man behind the curtain and the one most often quoted in the media was Patrick McRoy. Patrick, thank you so much for coming on What Mama Wants today so we can talk about some of your recent wins.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's great to be here.
For purposes of disclosure, I want to say that I serve on Defend Our Health's board. However, What Mama Wants operates independently and is not affiliated with that organization. Though I do sometimes have the pleasure of working alongside fabulous, smart, capable, and engaged people at Defend Our Health, just like Patrick. So just wanted to put that out there in the world.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's great to hear you, and thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. It's very cool that you just walk over to the studio today.
Beautiful day for it.
Yeah, perfect. So you're just getting back from a national PFAS conference. There, Maine was recognized as a leader in the fight against the class of man-made chemicals that just don't break down called forever chemicals. What happened in Maine recently to get this reputation as being a leader in PFAS action?
Yeah, so Maine is really well ahead of most other states in the country. And unfortunately, it's because we've had so many problems with this class of chemicals. I think we've all heard about the dairy farms and other farms across the state that have been impacted by PFAS pollution because of the use of sludge as a fertilizer. And as a result, we also have widespread well water contamination in Maine, which is, of course, the state that has the largest percentage of families on well water as opposed to public water systems. So unfortunately, the impacts in Maine have been very severe. But the good part is that our legislature has really stepped up and passed some really unique first in the nation, sometimes first in the world, laws to actually protect people from PFAS. So you mentioned in the beginning the ban on the use of sludge as a fertilizer. For the last 50 or more years, every state in the country has allowed sewer sludge, you know, which is left over after they remove the water from sewage. You can imagine what that is. And every state has authorized that to be used as a farm fertilizer. In theory, that's, you know, sounds like a good idea. It's returning nutrients to the soil. But the problem is everything else we put down the sewer, whether it's household cleaning products or industrial chemicals and manufacturing facilities, ends up getting into that sludge.
Yeah, not to mention the drugs we take, the chemotherapy we release from our bodies and the hormones.
Yes. Yeah. No, there's been high levels of birth control, for example, found in sludge as a result of that and birth control hormones and, you know, ends up on our fields and has been taken into plants, right? So that's how we first really became aware of this as a major problem in Maine is when Fred Stone's milk, cow's milk, was found to have high levels of these chemicals. So, you know, in addition to banning the land application of sludge, which first in the nation, Maine has gone to actually address some of the roots of this problem. So the legislature passed a world first law to actually prohibit the use of PFAS in everyday products. So these chemicals are used in a wide variety of things, ranging from waterproof coatings in our jackets and rain gear to things like cleaning products, right? Various floor waxes have been found to have high levels of PFAS. Dental floss has been found to have PFAS. Crazy variety of things. And the reality is it's not needed in those things, right? There are plenty of alternatives that are actually safer and just as affordable and perform just as well But for a variety of reasons, industry has used PFAS in all of these products, even though these chemicals are associated with health impacts and environmental impacts in the long run. So Maine's legislature passed the law that actually says, you know what, you're not allowed to use PFAS in products sold in Maine unless you, the manufacturer, can prove that there isn't anything else that could be used and that the product itself is essential for health, safety, or functioning of society. So even if we can't find an alternative for dental floss, and there are alternatives for dental floss, that use is not essential to the functioning of society or health because, you know, there's plenty of other ways to get stuff out from between your teeth. Not that I'm, you know, dental floss in general is a good thing. You know, I don't want the dentists and hygienists coming after me. I'm pro flossing, just not with toxic floss.
Yeah. Well, kudos to Maine.
Absolutely. Great job, Maine. We also are well ahead of most states in setting levels for how much can be in drinking water. So until very recently, the federal government said 70 parts per trillion of a couple of these chemicals is acceptable and safe in drinking water. Science for many years has suggested that those numbers are too high and we risk health impacts at those levels. So Maine became one of the first half dozen or so states to actually set a lower level, and Maine's legislature put in a level of 20 parts per trillion for a combination of multiple members of this class of chemicals. So it's, you know, hugely significant in being a leader in addressing these problems, and we're very excited to have seen Maine's legislature do so much.
Yeah. And why is it Maine is able to do this? What makes Maine so unique?
That's a good question. You know, I think part of it is the history of how we've learned about the problem in Maine. So in many states, PFAS was first discovered as a drinking water contaminant following its use in firefighting foam. So it's predominantly areas around some military bases. In Maine, we discovered PFAS in farmland and in farm products, and that really sort of altered the dynamics of it. The problems were occurring in very rural communities in more conservative parts of our state. So it was a lot easier to kind of bring the attention of both parties to the issue. So it became very bipartisan concern in Maine to address these because there was a wide range of families that were being impacted by it. And we've seen much greater bipartisan involvement on this topic in Maine than we have elsewhere. Plus, Mainers have a great deal of concern about the environment, right? And we have a great deal of concern for our family farms. And that has really driven Maine to respond to the PFAS crisis much more rapidly and thoroughly than most other states.
Yeah, people definitely care. This past spring, when it was found that Songbird Farm and the other farms were contaminated with PFAS, was it the Maine Farmland Trust or MAFCA that put out the call and people just couldn't give money fast enough?
It was really heartwarming to see people respond to the need to help our family farms in such a obvious and really fruitful way by raising $1 million plus to help.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, that's not enough. It's going to cost a lot more than that to actually make up for the financial losses that farmers have experienced, not to mention, you know, that potential health impacts that farmers, their families, and also nearby residents on well water are going to experience as a result of their exposure. And one of the other legislative successes was getting a fund created by the state, initially funded with $60 million, to begin to address some of these long-term impacts, both in terms of loss revenue, lost value of land for farmers, as well as actually doing the medical monitoring necessary to determine what are the health impacts and make sure that people who have been exposed to PFAS in Maine have the opportunity to get the medical tests and ultimately get the treatment.
And begin is sadly the most important word there. We're going to just begin this process.
It's unfortunately going to be a long process. You mentioned I was at the National PFAS Conference earlier, and the big announcement there was US EPA announced new advisory levels for PFAS. So I mentioned the drinking water standard from the feds used to be 70 parts per trillion. It is now 0.002 or somewhere in that range, well below one, below even levels that we can typically measure in commercial samples. Basically, the feds are now saying any detectable amount of PFAS in our drinking water is a concern. And once that kind of makes its way through to the other environmental standards, we're going to have many more problems, unfortunately, that we need to address to protect people from these chemicals.
So are you saying it's a good time to invest in water filtration organizations?
Yeah, sadly, I think that is the good news on drinking water. We can remove these chemicals with filtration. So we are going to need a lot more filtration systems. The challenge remains, though, in how do we actually remove it from the soil? How do we remove it from groundwater? Those are much more difficult challenges to address, and we don't have great solutions yet for those.
Yeah, calling all scientists. One thing we also don't have here in Maine, which I wonder how big a player this is a major chemical manufacturing facility or major interests by the American Chemical Council. Do you think that that's part of why we're so successful here in Maine?
It certainly makes our job at Defend Our Health easier that the big corporate opponents don't have the power in Maine that they have in other states. I mean, Maine also has a very strong legacy of clean elections and not having as much money influence our politics as perhaps, I'm originally from the Chicago area, and I can tell you it's very different here. Yeah. Not that there aren't problems here. There are problems everywhere with money and politics, but it's very different here, and it's particularly different when it comes to chemical company interests. So you mentioned the American Chemistry Council, the ACC, which is the trade association for the manufacturers and major users of chemicals. And nationally, they are the single biggest barrier to making sure that people are not harmed by toxic chemicals. And fortunately, they don't have a very strong presence in Maine. There are obviously industries in Maine that use PFAS and other chemicals of concern, but we don't have the manufacturing base that you see in West Virginia, Delaware, New Jersey, and other places.
Yeah. Stories really, really matter. You were talking about just even the way this story broke for us was hearing from farmers. Many listeners have seen Fred Stone in the papers and know about his PFAS contamination on Stone Ridge Farm, his family farm in Arundel. And perhaps they've even listened and heard his story on this interview, What Mama Wants, back in April. You have worked closely with Fred as he's testified before the legislature and tested his herd for contamination. How do you think his personal story has shaped Maine's response to PFAS?
Where we are at, and we've had so many successes in beginning to address this problem because Fred was willing to step forward and share his story publicly time and time again. So when Fred first learned about the contamination of the water under him, he really didn't have to do anything, right? These chemicals were then completely unregulated. No one was looking for them in cow's milk or any other agricultural product in any real way. There was no standards for it. But Fred felt, morally and ethically obligated to report that he had a potential source of contamination of his farm products. So he really took it upon himself to move that concern forward, and it ultimately costed him his livelihood, right? He still, to this day, has not received significant compensation for what has happened to him, and he continues to be unable to produce and sell milk. So he, voluntarily stepped forward and said, I think there may be a problem here. Let's check it out. Checked it out. Oh, yes, there is a problem here. And at that point, the state of Maine said, okay, you can't produce any milk anymore, but your land is not contaminated enough to be called a Superfund site. So good luck. Have a good day. They walked away, left him unable to continue his livelihood. But he continued to share his story to the press, to the public, and really became the face of PFAS in Maine, which was never really fair. I mean, initially he was portrayed as a bit of a unicorn who was uniquely contaminated. And it wasn't until we learned other farms that finally people were like, okay, this is a broader problem. But if Fred hadn't pushed this forward, I don't think anyone would have even looked for the PFAS elsewhere.
He made a heroic move for the home team.
He really did.
And
he really
it certainly did. Paid with his own health as well.
Yes.
I'm really grateful to Fred Stone and to people who took him seriously for moving us forward.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics, More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Patrick McRoy, the Deputy Director of Defend Our Health, champions of toxic-free water, food, products, and houses. Yippee! I love all of those things. You know, since PFAS chemicals persist in our bodies, they're not broken down and we don't wash them out, which is why those water levels need to be zero, because otherwise they just add up and add up. They're also endocrine disruptors and can cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and kidney, testicular, prostate, breast, and liver, ovarian cancers. It's hard for me. Like, that would be a gross understatement. It's extremely hard for me to understand who would be for toxic water, food, and homes. Can you help me understand why it's so hard to stop this fast-moving PFAS train?
Yeah, it's a challenge for many reasons. I mean, I think the one of the most significant challenges is the source of PFAS is very widespread, right? So it's been used in many different products. We named some earlier. We didn't mention food packaging, right? So when you get, or especially used to get, a fast food wrapper, right, that often would have PFAS built into it so that the grease in the burger, for example, wouldn't, you know, leak through the wrapper and onto your pants if you're eating it in the car or whatever. So that material is out there in the environment in so many different places. And we are talking about absolutely minuscule amounts of it that we are worried about having health impacts, right? So all the, you know, sort of conditions you mentioned are associated with, you know, compared to other toxics, very small levels.
Yeah, parts and per trillion.
Parts per trillion, or even now with the new advice, we really should start talking about parts per quadrillion, right? But just, so we're talking absolutely tiny, tiny amounts of it in products that have been used all over the place, many different ways, right? So it's very hard to put this genie back in the bottle, as it were, when it comes to the PFAS that's already out there. In terms of, you know, kind of turning off the tap and stopping it going forward, there's a lot of moneyed interests in keeping the status quo, right? So all of those industries that are currently using it don't want to instantly give it up, and they don't want to admit that they've been putting a toxic chemical into their products for the last, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
Well, how much of that is so that they don't get sued as well?
Right. Right. Yeah. No. And in fact, there was recently one of the fast food chains that voluntarily committed to eliminating the use of PFAS in their wrappers was then sued for using it in the past, which, you know, understandable. And, you know, that's a challenge for the companies. But, you know, I think the real problem is that these chemicals were used in the first place. And the systems that we have in place nationally to regulate chemicals aren't going to prevent that from happening again. And that's really the fundamental challenge, is we don't have a real system in place that identifies hazardous chemicals and prevents them from being used in the first place. We just keep being on this hamster wheel of allowing chemicals into our products, having a bunch of scientists chase after the fact, identify the health problems, and then go back and try to clean up the mess that's already been made, rather than starting from the beginning of actually testing chemicals before we put them into products, figuring out, are they actually safe or not, and then moving forward with commercialization.
I want that. I want that. And how do we get that? And I think most people probably think we have that, but we do not have that. So how do we get that?
Oh, we need to all demand that from the government, right? I mean, you know, sadly, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen without political pressure from all of us, You know, we need to write our representatives and say, this is what we want. Because right now, the chemical program at the US EPA, which is the body that regulates chemicals nationally, basically rubber stamps new chemicals into commerce every day. And they're, you know, evaluate, you know, 10 to 20 existing chemicals a year, and they're way behind even doing that. And there's, you know, something like 40,000 chemicals actively used in commerce. It's going to take eons, geologic time, for those chemicals to be assessed under current practices.
Maybe that's the point, right? You just make it so slow that it doesn't work. That's what we do with immigration.
It's sadly something that's very commonly done. It's inaction through process and paralysis, but that in itself is an action, right? We are allowing stuff to continue to be used despite not knowing much about it.
So when you say pressure on government, local officials or national, what part of government?
Yeah, I mean, every part is useful. I mean, Maine has made some great progress. You know, we've seen some tremendous legislation here that's going to make a difference on PFAS. There's potential to make differences on other chemicals as well. We need to continue to fight to make sure those laws are implemented and implemented well. You know, on the federal level, much less has happened. There's more need for things to happen on the federal level, but it's also a lot more difficult. So, you know, I think all levels of government are important. I think states have the opportunity to be leaders on this, though, and really pave the way for federal action.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like the government didn't know about this, because the military bases are some of the biggest consumers of this, and they're Superfund sites themselves because they've been housing these chemicals. So they've known.
It's complicated, right? I mean, they've known longer than the rest of us, but the chemical industry did their best to hide the actual facts and concerns from the government as well, right? So the original manufacturers of PFAS, you know, DuPont, 3M, they had studies going back decades that showed potential health impacts, that showed these chemicals accumulating in people and in the environment, and they actively worked to hide that information from the government. They were obligated by law to share those studies with the US EPA. They did not.
I picture them kind of in a very, very hot jail forever.
Sadly, that's not likely to happen by government action.
Yeah. So you are one person I want to ask this question to more than most. What do you think Mama wants from a policy perspective regarding PFAS? What's the big dream?
You know, the big dream, I think, is really getting back to what we were just talking about in terms of how do we actually assess chemicals for safety before they are put into use? How do we make sure products are safe before we just put them out there for people to use and later try to figure out the harm after the fact? So I think we need to move to a much more proactive system of regulating chemicals and products in commerce so that catching problems ahead of time, preventing illness rather than responding to it.
I nominate you for the head of that department.
Well, thank you.
To close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship to the earth, if you're game.
Sure.
Okay. As a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside in nature?
Bicycling.
Oh, yeah?
Definitely. There was a rails trails path near where I grew up, and that's how I got started in environmental activism, was there was a proposal to strip all the trees along it and replace it with a high voltage power line. So I worked in starting in junior high to try to fight that proposal.
Oh, good on you. Early activist. I love
it. Yes.
Describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe.
Oh, pretty much any time I'm on a mountaintop and just looking at the vast landscape and thinking about, you know, individual human significance in the broader scape of geography and geology.
Mm-hmm. You may find yourself on more scenic overlooks than most people as a long haul biker.
Yeah, I'm a motorcyclist. Yes. Yes. I've gone from bicyclist to motorcyclist, but yes.
Oh, yes. Between question one and question two, in fact. What's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
To always be mindful of what are the impacts on people, right? So, you know, I love the natural environment, but I also really want to make sure that all people have the opportunity to have a healthy interaction with the environment and aren't being harmed by contaminants that are in the environment.
And your mom taught you that?
Yeah. Very, very people-centric parents.
Oh, yay for them. You're so good parents of the world. What's one thing that you wonder about in nature? Something, how it works or why it happens a certain way?
I'm always amazed at the perseverance of life, right? So when you get into like an industrial landscape or, you know, an old paved parking lot, you still see the plants kind of growing up between the cracks and finding a way to survive even in these horrible man-made inhospitable conditions.
Grow, little buddy, grow. I know, it is such a great example of our resilience. And this one is the last one. What's your favorite baby animal?
Favorite baby animal. I'm going to go with, oh boy, that's, I'm ill prepared. I'm gonna go with a bunny. That's the first one to come to mind.
Little bunnies are
little bunnies
very
are
sweet.
Very cute.
Yes, they are. They're just like egg-shaped. Patrick, you are whip smart and a walking catalog of all things PFAS. It's not an easy topic, but your expertise has real consequences as it has played out in state policies and national awareness. Thank you for the years of your life that you've devoted to protecting us all from toxics.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here, and I really appreciate the kind words, but it really takes all of us to make a difference.
Yeah, it's a big team.